Hello gamers, and welcome to another exciting edition of Game Warp. I'm Elwood.
I'm Kim.
And tonight we are not only relaunching Game Warp, but we are also going to be talking about our favourite horror video games. And I'd just like to take this moment just, you know, welcome everyone back to the show, because we've been away for a while now, and it's we've been off working on various other projects and trying to, you know, play around with a few ideas here on the show. So hopefully somebody went down and checked on the stunt gamer, because he's probably been down there for a while, so.
The stunt gamer has been working on his own stuff, too, so it's been, you know, he's been doing a lot of racing, and a lot of, he's actually been streaming a lot of racing, and I will remember for the next time to add in his Twitch or something, so that anybody who likes racing games as such can go and, you know, give him a visit. Although he does race at some streams at some really weird times, so I don't know.
Going to appease his ego. As I said, we've been away for a little bit of time. We've been obviously follow our projects, we've been obviously doing our movie discussion thing over on Movies and Tea, which you can check out at moviesandteapodcast.wordpress.com. Where we obviously look at director filmographies, and here, you know, here on Game Warp, we're all about video games. We look at the independent and the retro with the occasional glance to the AAA titles as well, as we look at events such as E3 and those bigger AAA titles that, you know, we just can't ignore. But obviously our main focus here is mainly sort of like the independent and the retro side of things. It's one of those areas which is probably the most overlooked, and we obviously like to give a shout out to the independent developers out there, obviously doing just as exciting projects as the AAA guys. And at the same time, it's also fun to go back and revisit those fun games from our childhood and discover games that we didn't even know existed back then. So this is probably going to play in very well to tonight's episode, as we're obviously going to be talking about horror video games. And I think horror video games are something that they've got such cross appeal, and even compared to like sports games and like racing games, which have got very sort of like limited appeal, they've got their sort of set audience. Whereas horror games, it seems that they draw in like non-gamers, they draw in like hardcore gamers, and I think everyone's got that sort of like nostalgic memory of playing a horror game in sort of like their gaming history. So I mean, Kim, did you sort of like play a lot of horror games coming up, or is it sort of more recently you sort of play more horror games?
Well, I do play a lot of I enjoy watching people play horror games more than I enjoy playing horror games. I think I got more into the horror game scene in the last maybe the last 5-6 years, I would say. I used to play more kind of like, I don't know, I guess lighter games in that sense. You know, there were obviously some titles that I didn't know were considered horror were horror, like, you know, on PS3. I really liked Catherine, which when I was looking up horror games, apparently that's considered a horror game. You know, things that I didn't really expect, obviously. And, you know, there's obviously some bigger titles and stuff like that. While, you know, I'm not too good at it, I did enjoy watching you know, my husband, which is the stunt gamer, play Alien Isolation or, you know, Resident Evil Biohazard. Those are, you know, still considered fairly newer titles. I mean, I guess some of the older titles that we used to, you know, quote, open quotations, you know, around would be play is Dead Space. I watched him play a lot of that. That was really scary, too. I would say, you know, horror games have a lot of place. I mean, I think I remember the first horror game I played probably was Dino Crisis. And then I don't know if that's considered horror or just action. So
I think for the general sort of purpose of tonight, because obviously we're going to be doing a little bit of a draft and sharing our favorite horror games. And I think certainly any sort of game which sort of has those jumping moments that has you on edge, so certainly Dino Crisis did that, and it played very much into that survival horror genre. Those would be the sort of games that we'd be looking at. But as we'll probably discover as we go along, you know, horror games aren't just about the games which absolutely terrify the hell out of you. There can also be a lot of fun sort of horror games as well, when we think of things such as, like, you know, Poltergeist or Zombies Ate My Neighbors. So it's not just a focus on, whoa, what's the most scariest, what's the most goriest games we can sort of dig out here. It's a real bigger genre, much like horror cinema itself and horror literature. It's, you know, it's not just limited to the extreme shocks. You know, you also got the fun side as well to it, as we're obviously talk about as we get into our lists. As always, if you want to get in touch with us and get involved with the show, you can follow us on both on Facebook and Twitter, and you can also check out our archive,
gamewarpblog.wordpress.com, which I would like to mention is no longer our archive anymore. It's kind of our main site now, so. Which is, you know, to people before, now know that we're kind of running things. This is the whole reason. One of the reasons why we haven't been, you know, doing this as much, as we kind of, like, rebrand and reset, right?
Decided to go in a different direction than we were going before. And now, you know, we're out there, we're independent, and, you know, we're just Game Warp for Game Warp, rather than Game Warp as part of the larger project we were previously part of, so. But, you know,
the nitty gritty we keep to ourselves. But yeah,
words are exchanged.
You know, we can yeah, so, you know, it's hopefully gonna bring us in a really nice direction now. And, you know, to kick things off, nothing is better than horror, since we both really like, you know, horror in general. And I think one of our first conversations that we had was probably about horror movies, so talking about horror games would be is really on point here.
Well, as we go through the list, we're obviously going to be highlighting our favorite horror games that we've been recommended as we throw it out to our listeners, and we got really good feedback from both our fellow bloggers and just fellow gamers out there, just the sort of games that they wanted. So we're going to be highlighting some of those, their favorites as well, but. We're going to get now into our draft of this episode. So, I mean, Kim, do you want to kick us off with what would be your first pick?
Well, I guess it seems to make sense to start off with something maybe a little lighter, a little cuter. So I'm going to go with one of the first games that really got me back into horror, which is a little indie game called Spooky's Jump Scare Mansion, where the main thing is... It's a really, really silly game in a sense that it's created by Akuma Kura and Psychobilly 2422, made in Game Maker, which already shows how basic the game is already. The objective of the game is that you're in this first-person perspective, and you need to go through 1,000 rooms of jump scares created by this little ghost called Spooky. So I think about every 100 rooms or so, you kind of get through this, you have this change of pace. So during the process, you also get to meet all kinds of bosses and stuff like that. They're not particularly hard to beat, nor are they like really, you know, intense. But there are some, you know, there are some moments which the game really pays a lot of tribute to other games with some of their bosses and stuff. I mean, one of them, for example, is... I believe that it's supposed to be Silent Hill. I've never played it before, but I believe it's like it's like reminiscent to Silent Hill, and there's like a classroom, and there's like a girl goes chasing after you and stuff like that. So a lot of it is also randomly generated, but I mean the majority of this is really just cute little terror. So you get like these things that start off very light, like these boards that just pop out of the wall randomly, and then that's your jump scare, because you don't expect it, and you don't know when it's going to happen. So, so this is my first pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting game. It starts off so cute, as you said, you have the little boards that pop out, and it goes, boo! And then it's and the further you get into it, the more twisted it gets, and it's one of those, much like... the Literature Society game that we've talked about.
Doki Doki Literature Club.
Yeah, where it's all sort of, oh, cute, and then the world suddenly gets a little darker. that's certainly an interesting title, definitely. So, for myself, I'm going to be actually going through my picks. We're going to be going by generation. So, because we've already got five picks, we're obviously going to skip over, like, the... third generation stuff, which is obviously why I sort of come into gaming and with like my Amiga. And while there's obviously been horror games, I think as long as there's been video game consoles, we can like look back and see like the really questionable video game versions like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Friday the 13th. And as we get a little bit further into like the Amiga and we start getting some really cool sort of games appearing, such as like Alien Breed and Space Gun and It Came from the Desert, and certainly the HR Giga inspired Darkseid, which is one of those old school titles where you basically, if you screw up in like the first 10 minutes of the game, you've just broke your game essentially and you have to start over. So thankfully as games went on, they became a little less sadistic in that respect. But I mean, kicking things off, we're talking about the fourth generation games. So this is like the SNES, the Genesis, that era. And for my first pick, I'm going to go with Zombies Ate My Neighbors, which you can get on both either the SNES or the Mega Drive. And basically, you play as one or two characters, as a boy or a girl, and you have to run around the neighborhood finding survivors and defeating zombies and other horror sort of creatures. The whole game is just a real big homage to just horror, and the fact that you have levels based at who take their name from like popular horror films. And it's just a really fun game. You bounce on trampolines to cross over fences and use like real homemade weapons like squirt guns and cola to defeat zombies. So yes, it's got all the horror iconography, but at the same time, it's really light and fun. So, and it's also a game where you fight a giant baby, so, you know. But, I mean, for the fourth generation, there's so many sort of fun titles. And we saw some, like, extreme titles, such as, like, the Splatterhouse film ones, which were just, like, really fun and gory. And then you had lots of, like, really fun ones, much like Zombies Ate My Neighbors, where you have things like Decap Attack, where you play this mummy who shoots his head out at people. And we saw like Super Castlevania 4, which I think a lot of people would like go with, or like Musha, which was kind of like a Japanese feudal Japan style version of Castlevania. And there's also like Nosferatu, which is on the SNES as well. So there's lots of those sort of side-scrolling vampire monster sort of punches. But as I said, the one I always come back to is always Zombies Ate My Neighbors, just for, like, the pure fun value of it. So that will be my first pick. And one of those titles I hope that when, as we get these sort of, like, retro game collections, I really hope that it gets support to, like, one of the current-gen consoles, just because it's so much fun and one that I think you'd still have a lot of fun with now. So
I definitely think that something like that will happen soon, especially since, you know, I believe this one also has, like, what, a two-player mode also?
Yes.
Which is, you know, very in time with the current trend of having, you know, couch co-op games and such.
It is, and I love the couch co-op, mainly because it's so much more fun to abuse someone on the couch beside you rather than, like, some 10-year-old in the States or wherever.
Or even just, you know, the whole idea of, you know, having, you know, the plague of, you know, us recording is internet problems and connection problems. And that's a very real thing when you have, like, co-op, like just online co-op, even with friends. So the next thing on my list, I'm going to admit right now that I never finished the game.
Okay.
But I actually thought this was a really, really nice title that was on there. And that is, it's based on a movie. And that's Monster House. It was developed by this company called A2M, Artificial Mind and Movement, here in Montreal. Which is now changed brand to Behavior, who is the developers of Dead by Daylight.
Okay.
So this is, Monster House is a third-person shooter survival horror game. It's, you know, just like the movie itself, it's actually, you know, very lighthearted. But it has, you know, that Monster House element. It has a lot of, like, little, I guess you can call it creepy moments. And it's you know, very fun to play. I think it was on, I think I played it on Nintendo DS, which was probably why I didn't finish it, because my DS ended up dying. But It was also on PlayStation 2 and GameCube and Game Boy Advance. And yeah, so pretty much it's the same story as the whole movie that, you know, I don't know if anybody saw the movie, but it was about three kids who goes into this house, and then they explore the many, many rooms, and then, you know, the house is alive, so everything is moving, and there's bosses, and, you know, little obstacles and stuff that they need to get through. I think the game wasn't super long, but I mean, it still was based on a movie, so it had, you know, I think maybe about 9 or 10 chapters or so in total. Yeah, so there was like all these little cute little weapons, like water balloons and all that stuff, just like, you know, how kids would attack, would bring to a fight against a evil house. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, Monster House is actually a really great movie. I don't know why it doesn't get the same sort of play, because I would have thought they would have really played to like the Nightmare Before Christmas crowd. But
yeah, you know, pretty much that's the deal. Is what I feel is that Monster House, because of the movie not having as much hype as I guess as anticipated, the game also didn't get as much hype. And actually, this is a really, really well done game. I started playing it, and it's like, for a Nintendo DS game, it's actually very well polished for the amount of, for, you know, most people who play DS know that, you know, shooting games are not really its forte. It's really lame most of the time. So this one really works very well for that kind of, for this type of genre, which isn't really, you know, the go-to thing you'd go to in any Nintendo console before the Switch, obviously.
And even then, I can't think of a shooter that you play on the Switch. I mean, obviously, you've got the Doom port, you've got the Wolfenstein ports, and you've got, well, recently, well, you've got the Overwatch port.
Splatoon, you know. Splatoon.
That's true. I stand corrected. I love the fact Monster House is written by Dan Harmon, who obviously created Rick and Morty. So you got like the kids who they're sort of like, oh, we like Monster House, and it's like, what else did this Dan Harmon guy write? It's like, oh, this Rick and Morty, that's a cartoon. Oh no. Unless your parents like really cool and they show you Rick and Morty, so but no, that's a cool pick. I never played the game. I saw the film. I like the film, but I never actually played the game, so but you know, with the DS, all the games are really cheap now, and it's worth. The DS is one of those underappreciated consoles, much like the PSP, and that they got these great back catalogs of games, and you can pick them up. I'll pick up both like the console and the games, like really, really cheap now. So it's really good to sort of dive into it. I know that thing a couple of years back now, I picked up my PSP, and I mean that thing is just so much fun when you're like traveling and stuff, and don't want to risk like having your Switch stolen, so
yeah, pretty much. I mean, I you know, for a future thing, is I'm probably gonna charge up my PSP and my other DS that I now have, which and start playing some games and maybe do some reviews on our blog or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. I want to get to pick up the 3DS just so I can replay like Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. Because
we're sidelining into consoles, but so like 3DS is, you know, one that I've always wanted, just because, you know, there's those Phoenix Wright games that was, you know, that was new and got it added got added to it and was never on the DS. So there's so many great titles on 3DS that I really like to play, just not in the 3D function, I guess, because, you know, the beauty of it is that you can turn it off. So, yeah, but I'm still waiting for, I don't know, some really sweet deal to come out for it before I go and hop in and buy one.
Yeah. You heard it there, folks. If you've got a Nintendo 3DS that you want to donate to a hardworking gamer, please let us know in the comment section below. Kim will be super appreciative.
Yeah, and I'll even pay the shipping fees. So,
there you go. Cool. So
what's your next title?
We're on to obviously the fifth generation games now, which is N64, PS1, and Sega Saturn. It feels so weird to say Sega Saturn, because it sort of like came and disappeared. It's like when you talk about the Dreamcast, it it just feels like this weird fever dream that, you know, the Sega once had a console after the Mega Drive. I think anything after the Mega Drive feels just like, what happened, Sega? You used to be like on top of the world, like going toe-to-toe with Nintendo, and then it was sort of like Sega CD and then Saturn and then the wonderful Dreamcast, when then it was just the dream was over and you're just now working for Nintendo. So I mean, fifth generation, here we get the era of the survival horror game really comes to the forefront. So you've got, like, as we mentioned earlier, you've got Dino Crisis in there, you've got Silent Hill 1, you've got Clock Tower 2, and Parasite Eve, and Parasite Eve 2, perhaps like a lesser extent. And the game I'm going to go with is probably going to surprise a lot of people, because they're probably going to put the sequel as their pick of this sort of era, but the one I'm going to go with is Resident Evil. And the reason I'm going to choose out of Resident Evil 2, which is the one that everyone's going to go to, is just the fact that when I first played Resident Evil, it was like such an immersive experience. You know, you go into this mansion and you're uncovering all these puzzles and like clues and collecting objects. And yes, I mean, the dialogue's ropey as hell and the character models aren't particularly great now, especially when you compare it to like Silent Hill, which had those wonderful character models, which obviously we don't get with the Resident Evil games. But there's just something about that first Resident Evil game, is the like initial shocks, like the dogs jumping through the windows, the first time you encounter a zombie, or hearing just like classic lines like, wow, you were almost a Jill sandwich, when Barry stops Jill from being crushed to death. And the fact that when you play as Leon, when you play as Chris for the first time, you enter that same room and you expect someone to kick down the door and it doesn't. And you just have to sit there and watch him get crushed to death because you took the wrong item. So, but yeah, again, it was such a really fun game. The fact you start in a mansion and you go down in secret labs and you're uncovering this whole sort of zombie conspiracy. And it was just a really fantastic experience, and one that's still fun to play now. You can play like the remaster, and now you can also get the remaster for part two as well. But as I said, there's just a lot of nostalgia attached to Resident Evil 1, so that's why it's going to be my pick for the fifth generation. But
so anyways, I just, you know, want to take a moment because it was used to be called Biohazard, and that brings up a memory that I actually did play Resident Evil when it came out then.
Yeah.
In the Biohazard, because when it's a really funny story, and I have no idea how it was because it was so long ago. Mm. But like, I remember playing Biohazard, and it was one of those things where my cousin has His like, my uncle would always buy my cousin these new consoles, and that's pretty much most of my gaming is when I was young, and then I remember them buying this console, and then what happened was his dad also bought him Resident Evil, but he bought him the Japanese version,
right?
So we're all a family of Chinese, and we're sitting here trying to decipher what all this Japanese is and trying to solve puzzles. And it was the most craziest experience, but yet so, like, we went nowhere. I can tell you, we went nowhere in the game. Nothing. I just remember dying a lot and that sort of thing and not really having much progress. But it was a very memorable experience. And there was, you know, for the time, Resident Evil was very creepy. The music and just the atmosphere of the mansion and all that stuff. Because, I mean, back then when this came out, it was, what, 96, yeah. 90-something? I mean, we were all, like, you know, 8, 9 years old, something like that. You know, so it was definitely an experience and a very memorable one. And I think that, you know, talking about it now makes me, you know, appreciate gaming a lot. Just the fact that, you know, things like this are memories that kind of, like, remind you that gaming is really fun in a group, even for single-player games and solving puzzles and stuff like that.
Oh, definitely so. I mean, with the Resident Evil games, it was so, up until that point, I mean, when we had, like, horror games, it was all sort of, like, fast-paced. And with Resident Evil, you're walking around a mansion and you're having this story unfold. And it really surprised me, the fact that it took off and connected with so many people. But, you know, it's, there's something about the Resident Evil games that just everybody really connected with. And I think it was, It was one of those first games where it was, like, genuinely shocking. I was, like, constantly, like, jumping out of my skin, like, when something would happen. And the jump scares were just so effective. Like, as I said, when those dogs jumped through the window, it was just every time it just got me with that. So it was a lot of fun there. And it's certainly when we look at, you know, the feedback we've had, I mean, certainly when it comes to, like, the fifth generation, a lot of people have a lot of fond memories of the fifth generation. And it goes back to those survival horror games. We've got, like, DJ Valentine says Silent Hill gave me nightmares for weeks. Those damn ghost children in the school. Can't complain there, DJ. I mean, this is a game where you get to beat knife-wielding toddlers in the head with a pipe. We'll come back to Silent Hill a bit later in this, but I mean, yeah, Joe also says the Resident Evil, Stephen over at the Asian Cinema Film Club, so I'd say Resident Evil 2. So yeah, definitely a lot of love for the Resident Evil series, and as we saw it, like, go on, it's sort of like gone from the survival horror to the action games when we get to, like, Resident Evil 4, and now it's like first person games when we get into the latest one, Resident Evil Biohazard. And it's interesting, but obviously if, like, survival horror games weren't your thing, so if you weren't, like, a fan of, like, Dino Crisis and such, there were some other good ones. I mean, we obviously had Clock Tower 2, we had Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which is pretty legendary, as well as Medieval, which has now got the remaster version coming out very soon if it's not out already. So, and then there's some more clunkier titles that if you're more willing to put up with the less forgiving gameplay. I mean, you've got things such as, like, Nightmare Creatures, which, and Shadow Man, which are just fun hack and slashers. So, but Kim, what's next on your list?
Oh, so many titles. I'm gonna go with a game that a lot of people hate on, I think. Yeah, so I'm gonna go with a title which has a lot of hate, I guess, in general. A lot of people nitpick on this title. Mostly because, I guess, as an indie game and a game from Indonesia, it becomes very, very, like, I guess with all that, there's a lot of, like, buggy moments and stuff like that. And this game is one that I recently watched a movie adaptation of, and that's Dread Out. So what makes Dread Out stand out for me is that it's developed by, you know, I said it's from Indonesia, so it's developed by Digital Happiness, and it's a Steam game, pretty much. I think they were supposed to be ported to PS4, but it never happened. But Dread Out is very similar to a very famous title in Japan called Fatal Frame.
Yes.
And it uses very similar mechanics where, you know, the main girl, Linda, what happens is that, you know, she gets sent into this kind of, like, alternate dimension sort of thing. And she realizes that, I guess the story in general is that, you know, she wakes in this place and she has to follow these things. And the only way she can fight these different creatures that she meets is by, you know, she can only see them through her camera, so she can only attack them by taking pictures of them. And what's really unique about this game, and I think a lot of games that I have coming up, probably I might just mention them all at the same time right now, is pretty much that it's based on Indonesian myths. So the mythical ghosts and stuff like that. And there's a lot of, you know, backstory on it, and it's really like a share of culture, while also being able to, you know, show that kind of, like, it's like a different kind of possession and paranormal ghosts and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of games are really, during, I think, those few years, a lot of games came out that were very similar to this sort of style. You know, Korea came out with White Day, a labyrinth named School, who also did the same thing. You know, this game was a little bit older. It was 2001 and remade in 2015 by ROI Games, which was originally made by Sonori. It's also the same concept where it uses a lot of Korean ghosts. And in this situation, they're trapped in a school where this one also had a lot of buggy parts and stuff like that. There was one part with a janitor, which was very annoying. yeah, so, I mean, other games like that would be, you know, in more recent would be 2016, Taiwan studio Red Candle Games came out with one which is called Detention. Which is also, all of these are all survival horror adventure games. And they're set in different times in these, you know, in these different countries, obviously. And it shares a lot about the ghosts and their beliefs and their myths and their culture. So, I mean, it's really nice that, you know, gaming, I really think that not only is it very good in that sense where, you know, detention is a somewhat of a point and click kind of game, like, you know, using different types of horror gaming and, you know, sharing those different horror stories, I guess, with these ghosts. And, you know, I think that, you know, these all these games executed those things really well. There was very creepy moments, you know. White Day was kind of, you know, like, there was that moment, like, ghosts would just creep up on you and you wouldn't know the different mechanics of the school and stuff like that. All of them had different issues also. Dread Out was probably a bit more straightforward in that sense. It was more, you know, on rails. But it was still kind of an open world in that sense. So, you know, I think that, you know, survival horror for these, they all had really, really creepy moments. And just because you don't understand, you know, the ghosts that they're using and the culture that they're using, that it becomes even scarier because, you know, you're learning while you're kind of going through this. And the writing for all of these are done pretty well also.
With the current sort of like world cinema climate, being the people more open towards cinema than ever, we... seeing these sort of more traditional sort of ghost stories from like Taiwan and Japan coming across, it's really sort of opened up what a ghost story or a horror story can be, which is always really fun and interesting. So when we get these sort of games of building on what films have been doing for a number of years now, I mean, really since back in 2001 when we still get like The Ring and Audition coming across. So when we get these sort of games coming across which are tapping into the same sort of ideas and mythos, it's really always interesting to play in it. It gives it that edge because you're not sure what to expect, whereas if we play like a Western horror game, you kind of know what a zombie does and mm-hmm. what a ghost can do, so you kind of know what to expect. Well, with these games, it's like can be anything at all. It's just that sort of fear of the unknown is really put to a new level there. So
yeah, those are really good titles. And you know, if you were looking for something else, I know that there was also one on like Norwegian sort of mythos, which is called Through the Woods. I haven't played that one, so I can't say much about it. But I've heard it's fair. I remembered watching the demo being played when it first came out, and like when the demo was released, and it looked pretty good. But I'm not sure how the game plays as, you know, an entire title, obviously. So moving on. What's your next pick?
Okay, so we're now on to sixth generation. This is PS2, Xbox, GameCube, and the Dreamcast. Again, another really interesting sort of batch of games that you can find for the consoles here. We've got more survival horror with the likes of Silent Hill 2, and you've also got like Fatal Frame 1 and 2 coming out this year. You've got Rule of Rose on the more sort of obscure side. You've also got Eternal Darkness for the GameCube, which I almost chose just because of its sanity meter, where basically the more paranoid and scared your character became, the more the game messed with you. Kind of like Until Dawn in that respect. But Until Dawn never like pretended that the game was broken or your TV was broken, which this game throws at you in one of its more memorable attempts just to generally fuck with the player. We also on the light swing, we saw Luigi's Mansion, very underrated. I mean, it came out on GameCube, so I wouldn't blame you if you obviously missed that. But we got Luigi's Mansion 3 coming out now for the Switch, and I think that's going to be a really great title. There was obviously Clock Tower 3, and we also saw the Feudal Japan style Resident Evil game, Onimusha, making its debut as well. For myself, though, I mean, again, Silent Hill 2 is so tempting to put here, but I think the one that is going to stand out there is every parent's least favorite game, and that would be Manhunt from Rockstar Games, one of their one-shots. And here you play a convict who's sort of drawn into playing through a series of sadistic games. As you go through each area and you have to battle through various psychos and commit horrible, horrible murders. It, unsurprisingly, censors and parents alike really didn't like this game, mainly because this is a game where you're sort of they felt you were encouraged to commit murders, and certainly it's hard to argue with it when you have the meter where if you held down the action button for the longer you held it down, the more violent the murders you were committing. So very easy to understand why, but at the same time there's a lot of really creative elements in there, as you'd expect from Rockstar Games. And the fact you could put your headset on and you would have the director talking in your ear, so you were essentially having the same experience your character was having, is just, it sort of like added that whole another level to it. But I think, as I said, I'm always going to go back and forth between Manhunt and Silent Hill 2. Silent Hill 2 was such a game changer and really sort of made Silent Hill like go toe-to-toe with Resident Evil. Was like, you know, this is the title to watch, and it's so deep in the fact the themes it's exploring and how well it did, the fact that you covered for the fact that the system can't render a whole town, so by having large areas of it covered in fog means you can cover for the lack of rendering. And even outside of like those two big sort of games, I mean there's just so many fun hidden little gems on there, like Stubbs the Zombie for Xbox, or like Evil Dead Regeneration, and like the Thing movie adaptation as well, which I think we need to like sit down at one point and just do like movie tie-in games, because there's quite a few really great movie tie-in games that I think a lot of people have forgotten. I think The Thing would be one of those. But yep, if we're gonna hack it down to one, then I'm gonna say sorry guys, but Manhunt is gonna be my pick of the sixth generation. Kim.
I'm sitting here debating my next game, so that's why I'm like, okay. So many choices. Okay. So I am going to go with my step back into horror gaming, like actual horror gaming, would probably be Layers of Fear. Layers of Fear is a 2016 game developed by Bloober Team. A psychological horror game. It's generally a game, this game is pretty much on rails. You go to the next spot, you change the house, you go through a door, you go back, the room changes. You know, a part of me wanted to go with PT. And PT is also a phenomenal choice to go with, actually. To those who don't know, do you know what PT is? Do you know what PT is?
Yeah, okay. I know what PT is. It's like,
just making sure. Some people didn't, so okay. So you know,
PT being the failed attempt to reboot Silent Hill, and now now if you own a copy of PT, you can sell your console for megabucks because they took it off the store and it's no longer available. Yeah,
pretty much. And you know, PT is a power team up, pretty much, right? So, you know, PT is such a great choice to add to this list, I think. But I'm just going to do a mention here because you will never be able to find it again, I would assume. unless you're willing to pay some big bucks. But yeah, no, Layers of Fear had that very similar concept. It was very psychological. Definitely not as scary as PT. But, you know, probably now going back, it might not be as scary just because everybody's abused that whole walking through the door and things change and going back and things change and looping hallways and such. But Layers of Fear is a bit different. It goes through this house that you go through, and you pretty much, you know, you play this disturbed painter who's, you know, trying to complete his, you know, magnum opus. So he navigates through this place, and a lot of the secrets and a lot of his memories come back to life as you touch different items. So it is very much on rails in that sense, where you just follow where you need to go to the next room. And if you can't go through that room, you probably weren't supposed to go there. You know, the door will lock behind you if you're not supposed to go there, and going to certain spots will trigger things. A lot of people gave this, you know, don't find it very scary, mostly because there's not really like that actual physical danger or villain kind of threat. So the lack of threat kind of makes some people not feel this game is as scary. For myself, I thought the atmosphere was really great. And for, you know, a game to kind of like step back into horror and really like, you know, work up, you know, the, just, you know, exploring and just in that atmosphere and in that kind of like there's some kind of jump scares and it's kind of unsettling more than anything. I think that it's a really great project, and I believe this was probably Bloober Team's debut game, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, this game is really, really amazing in that sense. And it takes some really, really disturbing twists. I have to say that probably it ends not too good. Like, I don't think the ending is as strong as, you know, the first, I don't know, 70% of the game. But I still think it's a very, very worthy title as you know, like a horror game itself.
No, nothing to argue with on that one. But I think certainly it's a... If you could, the fact that we're never going to get to play PT, I think it's definitely a fair trade-off to go and play Layers of Fear. So, good choice, Kim. Next up, we got 7th Gen, which is PS3 and Xbox 360. So, this has been really popular, especially when we put it out there to the community, sort of like the titles that everyone wanted to talk about. Especially for this generation of consoles. I mean, certainly we had like Dead Space being brought up a lot, and I mean, Dead Space is a really fun game. I think I psych myself out too much because everyone's telling me how scary it is, and I played a little bit of it, and it's kind of like The Thing but in space, and that's another one. It just really knows how to work its jump scares. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of been building up, much like Alien Isolation, to like just like tough up and play it. But it, I played a little bit and I did enjoy it. But I mean, with 7th Generation, we've got sort of standout classics such as like The Last of Us. We've got Heavy Rain. We've got Dead Space, we mentioned already. On the lesser extent, you've got like Alan Wake. You've got some really interesting titles such as like Condemned Criminal Origins, which is kind of like a walking sim, kind of a first person shooter, much like Fear, which also comes out on this generation of consoles. And if you wanted just like sort of the mindless sort of zombie bashing fun, you've also got Dead Rising. But still on sort of like the zombie track, for myself. And yes, I obviously should. I mean, Last of Us is an undeniable classic, but I don't tend to view it as the straight up horror game that, like, compared to other games on this list, and that's why I didn't choose it. And while Heavy Rain would obviously be another strong pick, the one I went for was Left 4 Dead 2, mm. which really built upon what we established with Left 4 Dead 1, a fun zombie first person shooter, but I felt it was kind of empty. So when we had Left 4 Dead 2, it felt like they corrected so many of the issues I had with the first game. You had four characters that had like real interactive conversations. You had melee weapons such as like chainsaws and frying pans and samurai swords. And when me and my friends got fired from Borders at Christmas, yeah, thanks guys, our whole sort of redundancy period, every evening we sort of get together over the Xbox and just like play Left 4 Dead, and it was just such a fun time, just like, you know, getting together and going out as a group of four and just slaying zombies. And the fact that the levels are so mixed up, you've got like the sugar mill, you've got like a funfair level, and you start off in like a building that's on fire, and you sort of bat your way through into like the into the safe area, and it's just really fun. And seeing how these characters interact with each other, and you can see so many like nods, especially to Romero movies, such as the fact that the finale of the first world is takes place in a shopping mall, which is obviously a classic throwback to Dawn of the Dead. So I think Left 4 Dead 2, it's still a really fun game, and it's great the fact it's got cross-platform. That it's now available to play via your Xbox One. So definitely check that out if you haven't done already. So that now passes it back to Kim. So what have you got now? So what are you going to... What's your last pick for us tonight, Kim?
Choices! Okay, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to cheat because I want these two titles in there, and I don't know how to do it properly. I've been cheating for the last few already, so I'm just going to keep on the trend right now. Okay, so the last two are games that we reviewed on Game Warp. And I feel that, you know, I feel that these are games that we discovered, and which is why I also put them in the last group, because they're also the most recent games that I've been playing, or I have played. And I think both of them I actually played twice. So that would be Tarsier Studios' Little Nightmares, which is a puzzle platformer horror adventure game. And the other one is equally, like, I think both of these are so, you know, I'm just going to say right now is that both of these are just so deceptive in the sense that you would never imagine this to be a horror game until you're actually playing it. And yeah. The second one is obviously our game of the year for the first year that we did reviews, and that was Oxenfree, which is a game that is like watching a comic, and yet it gets so creepy as you keep going that you just never expected it to take that direction. And I think both of these games really have that, you know, have that kind of like, one of them is, you know, Oxenfree is more of like a supernatural graphic adventure kind of game. It's a mystery by Night School Studio, which, you know, just, you know, Night School Studio after that game was on my map. Like, anything they did, I was like, I'm behind now. and, you know, I just really loved it so much. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to say it. Like, because I guess I should introduce it one by one. So Oxenfree is a supernatural graphic novel adventure kind of thing. And it's pretty much these people that you get to choose their dialogue and how the game will progress. And you start, you're on this island, and you have to, and you have to kind of figure out as you go along what happens. And as your friends disappear and things happen, you open something and it's like this new dimension sort of thing, and you trigger all these supernatural events that happen. It gets really, really creepy. And there's not really a whole lot of, I guess, adventure in that sense, where your adventure is just wandering around and trying to get off the island. And if you work super hard, you will get off the island. that was my whole second reason, the second run that I did. I actually did everything right, and I figured out how to get off. So, you know, work hard enough, you'll figure out what happens, pretty much. And Little Nightmares is, you know, featuring this cute little yellow raincoat clad girl called Six. And she's on, you know, she wakes up in, you know, pretty much, I don't know, a trash thing or a room or something like that. And then she has to navigate with her little, you know, fire around this place. And then she encounters all these creepy people, all these creepy creatures, pretty much. I guess they're a bit deformed in that sense, or a bit odd. And you have to go through all these different, like, very, very, I don't know, how you call them? Dangerous characters, dangerous bosses?
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not your typical horror, but the concept that you're playing this little girl and these monstrous size like enemies is just, it just kind of ramps up this the horror of it bit by bit.
Well, it's safe to say you would these two titles that would have been on my own list, so thank you for picking them both there, Kim. I mean, Oxenfree, that just ties into this whole idea of pastel horror, which we've been discussing off air recently with like Emily Martinez's K-12 project that she just put out, and then you've obviously had more releases such as like Paradise Hills, yeah, and Make Me Up. Mm-hmm. So this idea of pastel horror that seems to be slowly seeping into horror, which I'm really excited about because I think it's taking horror in a really interesting direction, and Oxenfree is very much the same. Everything's all like nice, and it's cute characters and pastel sort of speech bubbles, and you pick the little dialogues, and you don't realize until you get in that just how much impact like what your conversations you have with characters have. Mm-hmm. And then the ghosts turn up, and there's some moments where it's like so genuinely effective in that game that it just really sent me paranoid. I don't think winding up a radio has been as scary as it has with Oxenfree. So certainly I'm looking forward to After Party when that comes out soon. So definitely excited. That's going to be like a day one purchase for myself.
Yeah, definitely. So it's definitely something to expect, because we'll definitely be reviewing that one.
But Little Nightmares, again, why are more people not talking about Little Nightmares? It's available now on the Switch as well, so which I think is like the perfect console for it, as it's just such a beautiful game. It looks like you're playing through an animated film, so kind of like Dragon's Lair, but you actually have full control over these characters. And as you said, you play this little girl called Six in a raincoat, and she has to work her way up through the bowels of this ship. And as you go, there's no actual like dialogue mm-hmm. or anything like that. So you sort of piece it together, and that's really sort of the fun of it. Much like when we looked at Inside, the fact that you come together as fans and you like piece together all the mythology, and seeing these grotesque characters such as like the cook and the cleaner, and they chase you around this world. And certainly when you get into like later levels and you're like running along the table and there's like these characters trying to grab at you. Certainly that's a game which took me in like so many interesting and surprising directions that if you haven't played Little Nightmares, definitely pick it up now. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and especially because like Little Nightmares got a iOS release for mobile. Unfortunately, nothing is set for Android yet. It's supposed to be a different game pretty much. And then, you know, we have the sequel, Little Nightmares 2, announced for 2020 release, with no set date yet. So it's definitely the time to check it out before the sequel comes out.
Well, the final pick for tonight, we obviously come up to date now with the 8th generation, which is PS4 and Xbox One, and you'd also include, like, the Switch in this as well, but, I mean, the Switch hasn't really produced any horror games to talk about, so we can't really discuss that, although you can obviously talk about Doom, I guess, which... has the reboot of Doom has been, it's been fun, but then again, all the Doom games have been fun, so. But obviously in this, we've got like Alien Isolation, which again has been a really popular pick when the listeners obviously responded to us. I mean, like, Heather Baxendale over at the MILFcaster highlighted it, and with Alien Isolation, I mean, it's a game that... I still haven't really got into it just because I freaked myself out as soon as the alien turned up and I was like, nope, I'm done. the first scare is like, it was like, yeah, I'm not playing this by myself. You're sitting down in the lounge by yourself and you just like freak yourself out. So I might have to see if I can convince my wife to sit in the room and just sit at the computer somewhere while I play it. The fact you can make it an Oculus experience as well, if you're like super sadistic and like want that fully immersive experience, though, why does anyone want to make this a 3D game? Because I don't want to be more immersed than I already am in this game. But
yeah, well, the stealth elements of Alien Isolation is definitely very strong here, because the alien himself, like the alien design, is very smart. So you can't, you know, abuse it too much of hiding somewhere a lot or whatnot. The game is still fairly lenient because, you know, the different difficulty levels that you get. But, you know, the game itself is very unnerving. And as you go deeper in there, there's, you know, you never want to be caught, especially once, you know, you start going through the vents and stuff like that. It's a whole different experience, I think.
Yeah. I think the fact I'm so early into Alien Isolation, recently it wasn't my number one pick. I mean, you got Bloodborne, which is obviously the same field as like Dark Souls, the get good gameplay, which I suck so bad at, so
it's just dead all the time, dying all the time. That's not a fun gaming experience to me. So
the only thing I'm getting is get angry, and then get a new TV,
which we don't want to head in that direction yet.
No, but the game which I'm obviously going to pick of this era is Outlast, and. Okay. I mean, it could have gone with Until Dawn, and I mean, certainly the people. I mean, Chris obviously highlighted that, and I think the Stunt Gamers well highlighted, said that he liked that one as well. I mean, he also highlighted Final Station, which I didn't find particularly scary, but apparently he did. So we'll have to speak to him about that later. But yeah, I mean, Nick Rehack over at French Door Sunday, he had the same gameplay experience myself, where he played it with his fiance. She was playing it, and he was sort of watching it between his fingers, and when I was playing it with my wife, and she, as I said, she was like sitting there and tell me like which direction to go. And Oxenfree is so immersive. It's, you can watch it and it's like a playthrough and have the same experience, because it's very much like a movie. And the fact that you don't have weapons, the only ability you have is a video camera to see in the dark and the ability to run away with confidence, which you will be doing a lot. And it's so much more than like these jump scare like gamers out there, you know, people like PewDiePie and whatnot, who just sit there shrieking away playing it. It's so much more to it. It's a beautifully designed game and a very immersive experience, and one of those few games where I finished it and then immediately bought the DLC to just play more of it. The first game is just absolutely standout experience and one that's well worth checking out, although it is absolutely terrifying.
Definitely.
So, much like Until Dawn, which I can only play a chapter at a time, and the one I'm looking forward to showing my wife next when we have our anniversary on Halloween. So that's going to be our anniversary plans. We're going to sit down and play Until Dawn. So I'm going to have her make all the choices and see if she's like sadistic as me, where you like let your sister go at the beginning to try and save your own ass.
It's more like an idea of, you know, me and the stunt gamer was, he finished playing it and then we ended up comparing who we ended up saving and what was our end game. You know, did we save anyone? Did we kill everyone? What happened? You know, and some of the bad choices either of us made in there. And it's such a... I find games like that is so great because it's like you're watching a movie and yet you can still, you know, combine together to make it a collective experience. And, you know, I mean, if you haven't played it yet, the PlayStation has those, those co-op games that you play on your phone. Anyways, there's one that's called Hidden Agenda, which I think is done by a fairly popular team that I don't remember. What game did they do before? It's by Supermassive Games. It's the same guys who did Until Dawn. And it goes up to, I think, 4 players, and you connect through an app on your phone. And it's, you have to, you know, someone in there, I think, has a hidden agenda or something, and you have to make choices, and you have to solve these crimes in order to, for a case of a serial killer. It's not a horror game, it's more of an adventure game, but it's definitely something, you know, that's very fun to play as you know, a group of people, and it's like a couch co-op experience.
Before we get into the, is there anything that we haven't discussed this evening that you wanted to mention at all? I think I sort of cheated and mentioned most of them as we were going along.
Yeah, so. Well, I kind of cheated, so I really already talked about most of them. I mean, the other games on my list that I didn't talk about were, put on my list were, you know, Resident Evil 7, you know, Biohazard. Until Dawn we just talked about, Alien Isolation you talked about. Dino Crisis was mentioned, Catherine and mentioned earlier. There's only one other one that might be kind of like a runner-up in my list was, that I kind of struggled with because I didn't finish the game. I think I went up to the last chapter or the last whatever, and I didn't end up finishing it because there was a bug in the game. And, that was a game called White Knight, okay, which is, an indie game as well. It's, you know, black and white. It's about this, it's about this detective that ends up stranded in this house. And he's just kind of like this haunt. It's kind of like a haunted house. And he's walking around and with his like little lighter, like his little match, because it's back in like, I don't know, the, you know, whatever decade before, like the 30s, 40s, something like that. And he's just walking around with his little match. And, you know, it's a play on like light and dark, which, you know, brings all the fear because you can't see what's going on unless he has a lit and you're solving these puzzles in the dark. And but, you know, the issue with this one was it had a lot of buggy moments and a lot of like really, really hard to solve puzzles, and just some moments were just so difficult to figure out that I think that was one of the reasons why it didn't end up on my list. But it is a pretty good game if, you know, you didn't get a bug and not be able to finish the game.
Definitely so. As always, if there's a game that we haven't mentioned tonight or you want to let us know via social media, we'd love to hear from you as well. And you can definitely also let us know over on our blog, which is gamewarpblog.wordpress.com, where you can find not only our archive reviews, but you can also find old episodes of the show as well. But wherever you happen to be listening to us, you know, please do hit the like and subscribe buttons or leave us a review. It all helps raise the profile of the show. Just going through just some of the ones that we haven't mentioned, which obviously you guys have brought up as well. Again, Tim Palmer from the Asian Cinema Film Club and Guido Ramblings highlighted Ghouls and Ghosts, which is an old school title there, and I think a lot of people never finished just because it's so tough. But you know, if you can master that game, you really were the king of the arcade. He also highlights Quartz Party, Resident Evil 2, and Silent Hill. A lot of love for Silent Hill and Alien Isolation, definitely on the list as we were going through it, and as we mentioned already with Dead Space as well. Bubba Wito for Flight Tights and Movie Nights says Fatal Frame series, especially number 2, Crimson Butterfly. Fatal Frame is an interesting game because of the fact you're using a camera to hunt ghosts, and for that respect it, mm-hmm. So it's one that's worth checking out definitely as well. And finally we also have Parker from Junk Food Dinner, who highlighted, much like myself, Zombies Ate My Neighbors. It's one of my favourite games ever. Resident Evil 2, as well as the first season of Telltale's Walking Dead, is amazing. We didn't touch on any of the Telltale games like Wolf Amongst Us or the Walking Dead games. I've only played like a little bit of the first Walking Dead game, and it doesn't help the fact that the ending of that first block of gameplay was so spoiled by everyone. Now it's like, you know, the greatest ending ever, and it's like, oh, cheers, guys.
Yeah, well, I'm like the, you know, the person that the, you know, the maybe 1% in the world who's never watched any Walking Dead. So I've literally watched like 10 minutes of it. So you can see how Telltale Games of Walking Dead wasn't the, you know, most appealing thing on my list. So that never happened. And as you mentioned, Wolf Among Us, that's not really a horror game, I would say. It's kind of, you know, a bit gory, I guess, but not really a horror game. It's more of a mystery.
I'm really hoping that they work out something with the Telltale games, because obviously talking about they're going to bring out Wolf Amongst Us 2 at the moment, so, and there's other...
They had some really grand ideas, and then, you know, before all the financial issues or whatever happened.
It's kind of up in the air, because they keep saying they've got, like, these final sort of titles that they're coming out for, and every time they sort of mention, oh, we're going to be, like, doing the final Walking Dead game, we're going to do, like, a second Wolf Amongst Us game. The one I keep hoping they're going to do is just, like, oh, do another Tales from the Borderlands. So it's just so much fun. I just keep hoping that that they'll work out some sort of deal there with the property. But we also have Bending the Ink Machine got mentioned already, which I haven't played. I don't know if you played that one, Kim.
Bending the Ink Machine is a good idea. I like it. I like Chapter 1 a lot. And then it kind of goes downhill, like really fast downhill, like a lot of fetch quests, a lot of, you know, that sort of thing. You know, the art itself is great.
Yeah.
It's very, you know, old school animation. And I think that's, you know, the art and just, you know, some of these little unsettling moments are really there. The first chapter is by far, obviously, the best one. It plays a lot on the old kind of Disney style. You know, there's a character called Boris, which is very similar to the old Goofy. Bendy is kind of everywhere. There's, you know, kind of monster version of it, and the creatures are a bit creepy, but, you know, they're made of ink, so, you know, it's kind of like... I categorize Bendy and the Ink Machine more like not as intense as Little Nightmares, but somewhere like, I don't know, like a Monster House or something. Yeah. Like very light horror.
Awesome.
But definitely there's creativity. Like you can definitely check it out. I'd say to check it out if you had it access somewhere for, I don't know, free or something like that. That could be a nice, you know, a nice little game to check out.
Awesome. Well, there you have it. There's our list. I think we've not only highlighted our favourites, but we think we've touched on quite a few of the many horror games out there. And I think, it's such a varied sort of selection of horror games out there. There's really something for all sort of tastes, and plenty of games that still stand up now, which is always good to see. Because the problem with a lot of retro games is that, you know, you have fond nostalgic memories, but you forget those wonky-ass controls that you used to put up with because you didn't know any better. Mm. I mean, there was a time when it was actually quite shocking the fact you could look up and that you had one stick made you look up and around and the other moved you around. What craziness was this? But I'd like to thank everyone for listening, obviously. As I said, we hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. And please do let us know your favourite games. We'd love to hear what they are. And as I said, if you haven't done already, please do hit those like and subscribe buttons wherever you happen to be listening with us. But also, thank you to my co-host, Kim. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will be back soon with our next episode. But until then, good night.